Here's your sparkling water, Mr. Mountain.
Why are you stupid? Why are you carrying shameful polluting plastic bottles? Don't you know you're hurting Mother Earth? Mother Earth has given us so much. The birds, the bees, the ocean, Matthew McConaughey, peanuts. Why would you destroy all these beautiful creations?
I don't know. I don't know.
With SodaStream, you can make sparkling water at home in the...
How are we? Has anyone seen that ad before? No? Oh, man. It's like I was thinking this morning, I'm like, oh, I need to find this ad. And I couldn't find it, but I vaguely remembered it was about bottled water. So, well, there you go. Well, it reminded me a little bit of our scripture this morning. So I'm going to share our scripture with you. And eventually, hopefully, I'll explain why it reminded me of that ad. But let's share this morning from Luke 17. So Luke 17 is in the New Testament, the second half of the Bible. And from verses 11 to 19. And this is, so it's Luke 17, verses 11 to 19. And, yep. And it's as Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was going through the region between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered a village, 10 lepers approached him, keeping their distance. They called out, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were made clean. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. He was a Samaritan. Then Jesus asked, "Were not 10 made clean? But the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you well." Faith. So this morning, it's a bit surprising that we talk about faith in church. But I wanted to talk a little bit about this particular passage and how it says your faith has made you well. Because we all have faith in certain things. We all believe in certain things. But does our faith make us well? Well, the Greek word used in the Bible, so the Bible's translated from Greek, the New Testament, into English. And the Greek word used for faith is pistis. And it doesn't mean belief, as in, I believe in one Lord Jesus Christ, the only Son of God. It doesn't mean adherence to a certain religion, as in, I belong to the Catholic faith. The Gospels are not a set of theological treaties or doctrines about God or Jesus. They're a collection of stories. So the Gospels, that's Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, are stories about Jesus. And in particular, they're stories about trust. Pistis means trust. And today in Luke, this is a story about trust. There's this motley crew of 10 standing outside a village crying out to Jesus for mercy. And these 10 all had been classified as lepers. So it meant they'd either contracted the bacterial infection, I'm not going to get this right, Mycobacterium leprae, that sounds right. So they'd either contracted this bacterial infection for which there was no cure up until about 1940, and it caused a slow and irreversible degeneration of the skin tissue, and so it eventually led to swollen deformities all over the body. Or perhaps they'd come down with psoriasis or some other skin condition that looked like leprosy in its early stages, and it got classified just the same. People designated as lepers were required to live by law in isolation, apart from their families, outside the city gates, wear torn clothes, keeping their distance from others, and they needed to announce themselves to strangers by yelling, unclean, unclean. And that's where I got that visual for that, being followed around and saying shame, because they're basically saying shame in that situation. And I have my little bell here, unclean, unclean. But just as a side note, I was thinking this morning, how often do we have that little announcement go through in our head? You know, we think back to something we've done and we think, oh, that's made me unclean. Sometimes, for me, often when I think about the things that make me feel guilty or the things that make me feel shameful, I just have this kind of monologue going through my head. I'm unclean, I'm unclean. So for people suffering from leprosy, they had to live in isolation. They had to yell to strangers that they're unclean. They had to announce their uncleanliness to others. And it sounds harsh, but nobody knew about bacterial infections back then. Leprosy was thought to be a result of some kind of curse that was probably due to a sin on the part of the sufferer, or maybe a sin of their family. But basically, it was pretty much accepted that people were responsible for their own fates. So they were responsible for contracting leprosy. And we like to think that since then, we've come a long way. In 2000, the World Health Organization announced that global leprosy had been eradicated thanks to antibiotics. But I think we still have lepers today in our society. There are plenty of physical ailments and mental illnesses that still bewilder us and still bewilder the best of modern medical practitioners. And those that suffer from them are often met with a similar attitude. I don't know if anyone's been to the movies yet to see Joker. That's out at the moment. And a lot of its focus is on mental illness. And people were bewildered by the behaviour of this person. Often we're bewildered by the lepers in our society today. I was going to mention my next comment, but I wanted to put out there that I'm not calling anyone a leper, if I'm going to give some examples. I have a few friends that have fibromyalgia, and it's a chronic condition that causes debilitating pain all over the body for reasons that no one is able to explain. And after years visiting all manner of doctors, undergoing all sorts of tests, trying all kinds of treatments, including prescription medication, vitamin supplements, hormone therapy, homeopathic remedies, yoga, acupuncture, massage, herbal tea, special nutritional vegan detox smoothie cleansers. All along the way, rationally minded neurologists and New Age positive thinking healers alike suggest that the illness is probably the result of psychological attitude or some set of choices made along the way. And you know, similar assumptions are often made about people living in all manner of poorly understood conditions, from depression to multiple sclerosis to cancer to homelessness and systematic poverty. We are relentless in our need to oversimplify and assign blame and shame when answers are elusive, when we don't have the answers. We want control. And so in the absence of scientific proof or psychological or sociological clarity, we tend to fall back on the same age-old assumptions that people are responsible for their lot in life and that in the end, we get what we deserve. Hey. It's karma. But Jesus, he steps into that world and he says, to hell with causes and conditions. Whatever your circumstances, there is always an opening to new life, which you can access through pist, through trust. This, for me, is the meaning behind so many of the miraculous healing stories that we find in the Bible. Over and over, we hear the same refrain, your faith has made you well. This is not about belief. This is not the idea that if you just believed hard enough in Jesus, that he would make the cancer go away or he would make you feel better. Pistis is about trust, radical trust. Faith is the life we choose to live when life seems impossible. Faith is placing the weight of your trust on the goodness and loving kindness of God, regardless of your personal circumstances. Faith is what allows us to move even towards our own death, trusting in the crazy, radical promise of new life in resurrection. The gospel stories, these stories in the Bible, show us that when we act with trust in God, in spite of how dire our circumstances may seem, we demonstrate real faith and we find true healing. In today's story, Jesus sends the 10 lepers back to the priests to be reclassified as clean without having healed them. He sends them back without having healed them. It's pretty risky for people that are meant to stay away, and particularly to stay away from priests at that time, to go back without having been healed. The lepers were required to step into the reality of their own healing before it had actually occurred, and without any evidence that it would occur. They were made clean as they went. And there's a book by Brennan Manning called Ruthless Trust, and he writes this: the way of trust is a movement into obscurity, into the undefined, into ambiguity, not into some predetermined, clearly delineated plan for the future. The next step discloses itself only out of a discernment of God acting in the desert of the present moment. The reality of naked trust is the life of the pilgrim who leaves what is nailed down, what is obvious and secure, and walks into the unknown without any rational explanation to justify the decision or guarantee the future. In Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a recovery stage called acting as if. And it involves making the conscious decision to act in accordance of one's own recovery, even when that person feels totally overwhelmed by the negative thoughts and feelings that would drive them back into addictive behavior. The trick is not to lie to yourself about what you're thinking or feeling, or try to repress it, but to simply make a choice to live in a new and different reality. That is pistis. Sometimes it can mean acting without belief. Sometimes it can mean acting as if you trusted in God, even if you aren't sure whether or not God even really exists. There is real power in this kind of trust. This kind of faith that can move mountains, the deepest kind of faith there is. Sometimes trusting without belief. Acting as if you trusted in God, even though you're not sure whether or not God even really exists. Because the choices we make in our lives with our actions express our inner convictions far more authentically than any construct, any feeling, any creed ever could. And I don't know if the name Mother Teresa rings a bell for anyone. Some of you would have heard of Mother Teresa. You would have perhaps read some quotes from her. You'd know a little bit about her story. But much has been made in recent years of the doubts that plagued her in the last half of her life. And in Time magazine, it calls it a crisis of faith. And yet what's really remarkable, what actually makes her a great example of Christian faith and worthy of sainthood in the Catholic Church, is that she continued to act with overwhelming trust in God's reality and presence, even when she could not personally perceive or feel that presence. That is biblical faith. And I think of Mother Teresa, and I think of the circumstances that she worked and she lived in, and she would work and live among people with leprosy. She would work and live among the most hopeless of circumstances, and yet she still believed that God would make people well. To trust in the love of God in the face of the marvels, cruel circumstances, obscenities, and commonplaces of life is to whisper a doxology in darkness. And that's a quote from Brennan Manning. Sometimes around us, the darkness is all we can see. And a whisper is all we have to give. When life seems dark, when life seems hopeless, a whisper is all we have to give. When we find ourselves in the midst of pain or in sickness or danger or grief, Jesus doesn't ask us to whitewash it. He doesn't ask us to deny it or analyze who's responsible for it or try and make it go away. The faith that Jesus calls us to only asks that we step into our own healing by continuing to move in the direction of life and love, even or especially when all hope seems lost. Jesus asks us to trust when all hope seems lost. This kind of faith is not dependent on your ideas or your feelings or particular outcomes, but on the choices we make in every single moment of our lives. And that is the kind of faith that has the power to make us well. I'm just going to play another clip up there, Tash, if you're able to put it on for me. And it's from the movie Patch Adams. And I love this movie. I love what it stands for. And we're going to play this clip, and hopefully I'll get to stop before we get to the language, because I want to censor it. But we'll see how we go.
You've been accused of practicing medicine without a license. It's a very grave charge, son. Are you aware that it's unlawful to practice medicine without a medical license?
Yes, sir, I am.
Are you aware that running a medical clinic without the proper licensing can place both you and the public in a great deal of danger?
Is a home a clinic, sir?
If you are admitting patients and treating them, physical location is irrelevant.
Yes, sir. Will you define treatment for me?
Yes, treatment would be defined as the care of a patient seeking medical attention. Have you been treating patients, Mr. Adams?
Well, sir, I live with several people. They come and go as they please. I offer them whatever help I can.
Mr. Adams, have you or have you not been treating patients at your ranch?
Everyone who comes to the ranch is a patient, yes. And every person who comes to the ranch is also a doctor.
I'm sorry.
Every person who comes to the ranch is in need of some form of physical or mental help. They're patients. But also every person who comes to the ranch is in charge of taking care of someone else, whether it's cooking for them, cleaning them, or even a simple task as listening. That makes them doctors. I use that term broadly, gentlemen, but is not a doctor someone who helps someone else? When did the term doctor get treated with such reverence as, oh, right this way, Dr. Smith, or Excuse me, Dr. Scholes, what wonderful footpads. Or, pardon me, Dr. Patterson, but your flatulence has no odor. At what point in history did a doctor become more than a trusted and learned friend who visited and treated the ill? Now, you ask me if I've been practicing medicine. Well, if this means opening your door to those in need, those in pain, caring for them, listening to them, applying a cold cloth until a fever breaks, if this is practicing medicine, if this is treating a patient, then I am guilty as charged, sir.
Did you consider the ramifications of your actions? What if one of your patients had died?
What's wrong with death, sir? What are we so mortally afraid of? Why can't we treat death with a certain amount of humanity and dignity and decency and, God forbid, maybe even humor? Death is not the enemy, gentlemen. If we're going to fight a disease, let's fight one of the most terrible diseases of all, indifference. Now, I've sat in your schools and heard people lecture on transference and professional distance. Transference is inevitable, sir. Every human being has an impact on another. Why don't we want that in a patient-doctor relationship? That's why I've listened to your teachings and I believe they're wrong. A doctor's mission should be not just to prevent death, but also to improve the quality of life. That's why you treat a disease, you win, you lose. You treat a person, I guarantee you'll win. Now here today, this room is full of medical students. Don't let them anesthetize you.
You treat a disease, you win, you lose. You treat a person, and I guarantee you'll win. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And it's very sad and ironic, isn't it? The kind of faith that has the power to make us well doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to make us physically well in this instant. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to make us emotionally well in this instant. But the kind of faith that has the power to make us well is a trust in Jesus. And if we trust in Jesus, then he wants to make us whole. He doesn't want to just make us well physically. He doesn't want to just make us well emotionally. He wants to make us well spiritually, emotionally, physically, in all the areas of our lives. But we need to trust that he has the power to make us well as well. And so this morning, we're going to sing a song in a moment. And the song is, I've gone blank, The Potter's Hand. And it's about trusting ourselves into God's care, trusting that God is going to shape us into who he wants us to be, that God is going to shape us into whole people, people that get to experience life in all its wonder, in all its glory, and in all its pain as well. But this morning, as we sing this song, I want you to perhaps reflect on your own life, reflect on the own, on the faith that you have, and perhaps you have that faith that that's just trusting, even if you don't believe that, or even if you're not sure that God is real, or perhaps your faith is different than that. But this morning, as we sing this song, I want you to reflect on that kind of trust, no matter what life throws at us, that we'll trust in God.